Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shabop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
June 17th, 2019, my friends and listeners and fellow aficionados of politics, current events, and something which seems to wrap itself around anything going on in the news currently, and that would be humor. Adam Lepp here with mid-morning coffee break, and much of the time we have our official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ron L. Feinman, from somewhere where it's always at least springtime, southern Florida. But the professor is taking a sabbatical today. We gave him a week to take care of other stuff, which isn't a big deal, as he will only have more things to talk about next time we get together. But I have a special treat for you, and I've been looking forward to this for weeks. I'm going to learn something. You, as a listener, are going to learn something. We're going to laugh. We're going to laugh a lot. And I think I might encourage you to spend just a few dollars, and I just mean a few, to buy one of the best books I think that has come out, especially in nonfiction, in the last few months. We're going to take a trip to somewhere. You know, it's kind of appropriate because this city is known for a lot of rain. It is the home of one of my favorite TV shows, Frasier, and I remember one episode, and people in this town kind of rode Frasier, rode his back or other body parts because he kept saying it was depressing, and all it really did was rain. But, you know, here in the Buckeye State, we've been getting a lot of rain the last few days. It seems like this is one of the rainiest years in a while. So I guess I'm getting more exercise, mowing my lawn. The flowers are growing, and almost seems like we've taken a trip a couple thousand miles to the west and a little bit north to the home of tech companies, Microsoft and others. The beautiful city of Seattle, Washington. And who hangs his hat in Seattle? Well, it is another presidentologist. And like Ron Feinman, this gentleman has a lot of opinions, a lot of humor, and this 42-minute segment is going to fly. I present to you Mr. Mike Purdy, and we're going to talk about his website, presidentialhistory.com, as well as his new book about presidential insults. So, Mike, I know it's 3 hours earlier there. It's just a few minutes after 8 in the a.m., after 7 in the a.m., 3 hours behind. How are you doing on this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing fine. My apologies for sending rain your way, but yes, I bring you greetings from Seattle, and it's good to be on the show this morning.
Was Frasier right that Seattle is depressing because of all the rain, or was he over-dramatizing? I know it's a high-tech city, and the air is clean.
Well, a lot of people say that the rain is depressing for them, clearly, and those people tend to move or just complain a lot. But, you know, a lot of us are used to it now. I've lived here for many, many years, and I'm used to it. It just happens, and it makes it nice and green, so it's a beautiful place to live.
Yes, and you always end up taking a shower when you go outside. Everybody always smells nice. Yeah, it's
right.
An interesting area. You're near Canada, not far from California. You have the Pacific
right.
Ocean. So
right.
Just a different lifestyle. I know when we went there on vacation, this was the 70s, I mean, at least 40 years ago. I remember it was summer, and my mom said how sunny it was, that when the sun comes out in Seattle, it is just bright. And being actually rather north, people don't realize Seattle is quite a bit north of central Ohio. The sun does shine quite brightly. And the weather,
it does indeed. It sounds like you just happened to hit a time when the sun was shining. A lot of times in the summertime in particular, we just get absolutely gorgeous, beautiful days. But, you know, then in the wintertime and other times, we do get some clouds and some gray skies and some rain. So it all balances out, though.
Yeah, it's a good place to live again. Microsoft and many other tech companies are in the area. So, of course, the state of Washington was, I imagine, named after the first president. And like Dr. Feinman, Mike, you are a presidentologist, a word that I've coined, which seems to have been taken up by the History News Network, which Ron does write for regularly. You're a similar kind of a gentleman in that you have studied and been interested in the office of the presidency since you knew what a president was. And so I guess it's fitting that you live in Washington, named after the first president of the United States of America. Of course, last Friday, Mike, as you know, was Donald's birthday, number 73. Of course, lots of memes going on about Donald. He certainly has been a president. Love him or hate him, as you would agree. He has opened people's eyes about the office, caused people to be interested in our history of our great country, presidential and otherwise, interested in politics and forming an opinion about issues. Yes, he is polarizing. And even people that like him say, we don't care about his sex life, about what he's done in the past, that he doesn't speak very good English. We just like that he gets things done. And his detractors will, of course, expand upon that, saying that he maybe is the worst president ever. You know, my opinions are mixed, more negative than positive, but there are things I agree with him on. And I do think that the idea he has stimulated interest in politics at our great nation, that is important, whereas some other presidents, for example, the Bushes, for example, were maybe a bit on the boring side. Not that they weren't good men, just different personalities, certainly more
right,
so.
Right, and we've had other presidents who've been quite boring as well. You can look in the 1840s, 1850s, there's a number of kind of non-entity presidents, Millard Fillmore or Franklin Pierce or James Buchanan. We had a string of presidents that weren't terribly good at the time. And so I think you're right that Donald Trump has definitely gotten people's attention on both sides of the aisle in terms of thinking about what are our institutions all about and how do they function. And so a lot of conversation going on.
Yeah. Now, president that I think is one, if he were president now or I were in a time warp, would be coincident with a lot of my beliefs, was Theodore Roosevelt, again, a progressive-type Republican. The old-school Republicans, as Ron and I talk about every show, are not the same as today's Republicans. Fiscal conservatives like I am, but certainly open-minded, progressive, on the people issues, understanding that we are, as I sometimes say, a compassionate capitalist-type government. But times do change, right. And we're not going to see the Abraham Lincoln or the Teddy Roosevelt type of Republicans, and we have a lot of polarization currently. Now, one thing about Teddy Roosevelt, Mike, is he had a bit of a potty mouth. We know Donald Trump, he uses the S word.
Yeah. Prior to the 2016 campaign and election, I think we would have had to have gone back all the way to 1912 to find that kind of language being used and as frequently. And so Theodore Roosevelt, I mean, I think I agree with you. He was a very good president. There's a lot of things I really like about what he did. And he brought, the presidency, modernized it in ways that no other president had done before. And a lot of good things he did. I think the tragedy of Theodore Roosevelt is the fact that 1912 came along, and he had said in 1908, as William Howard Taft was, actually before Taft was elected, but when Roosevelt was elected in his own right in 1904, he said something that, he wished he could take his right arm back for. He said he wouldn't seek another term as president, but he loved being president, and he was good as president. And so 1912 comes along, and William Howard Taft hasn't done what Roosevelt wanted him to do. Taft is a little bit more conservative than Roosevelt is. But the real issue, in my mind, is Roosevelt kind of lost his way. He was young when he left the presidency, and he was not at the center of attention anymore. Roosevelt had a huge ego. His daughter, Alice, once said that her father always wanted to be the bride at every wedding, the corpse at every funeral, and the baby at every christening. He had to be at the center of attention. And so Roosevelt, when he goes and he campaigns in 1912 against Taft, he creates his own party, the Progressive Party, the Bull Moose Party, and you've got Wilson, the Democrat, running as well. And there is some pretty vitriolic and angry language that spews forth from Roosevelt's mouth, which I think kind of taints his reputation and his legacy in some ways. Of course, Taft, you know, got into the game as well. He didn't like it because Taft and Roosevelt used to be the best of buddies, too. And Wilson got into it as well in this 1912 mud fight for the presidency. So Roosevelt did a lot of good things, but you're right, absolutely right. His language was sometimes not very statesmanlike.
Interestingly, Mike, Donald was at election our oldest president, just a little older than Mr. Reagan. Interestingly, they both came from a show business background, and Roosevelt was one of the youngest. I think it was either he or Kennedy. You of course would know the youngest.
Roosevelt was the youngest man ever to become president when he became president upon McKinley's assassination, while Kennedy was our youngest elected president.
So I guess I was right. The youngest president to take office, but he wasn't elected at the time. He was early 40s, I believe, 42, 43. I guess you know the exact.
Yeah, 42, I believe.
So just interestingly, we grew up, Mike, reading those presidential coincidences between Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy, some of which are just amazing.
Yes.
The parallels. And now we're seeing parallels between two unlikely people, you know. Politics makes strange bedfellows, as my mama always told me, and she couldn't have been more right. We have Donald Trump and Theodore Roosevelt, and the youngest president to take office, although he wasn't elected directly, he was elected indirectly. And the oldest, Donald Trump, of course, lifespan has changed in 100 years, but just looking at it empirically. And both Republicans, although very different Republicans, certainly as Ron and I have talked about, Lincoln and Roosevelt would, and even possibly Nixon, would be considered Democrats nowadays. Nixon, we take a look at his great environmental record, and that's something the Republicans seem to have an issue with. So parties have changed, and, you know, I'm an independent, and even more so now because I can't make heads or tails between this divisiveness. And, you know, I guess I average out as middle of the road. But it's certainly gone haywire in terms of these differences. But like
it really has gone haywire.
You've got
polarization today that we've never had before in quite the same way, where the country is as divided. I mean, you could go back, and you'd have to go back all the way to the Civil War to find this level of polarization, and it certainly happened then. And it's interesting if you look today at the 2016 electoral map and what happened. You know, the red state, blue state divide is in some ways very similar to the north-south divide of the Civil War. So, in some senses, not a lot has changed, but we are at a very, very polarizing time. And that's part of what, you know, I really hope that we as a nation can begin to think about: how do we come together as a nation, and how do we not personally insult, you know, people who we disagree with politically? How do we not demonize people? How do we not insult their humanity or their patriotism? And how do we try to figure out ways to treat each other with respect and humility?
Yeah, we're all Americans. We should all be on the same team, and maybe we should take that a little more seriously. So, getting into the main topic of this discussion here, Mike, again, the one thing that Theodore Roosevelt and Donald Trump have in common, again, besides, well, Republicans, but a very different Republican Party, is they both use language that we might want to tell people, don't let your 10-year-old hear. I mean, they may hear it at school, but we don't want to say it on a family radio station. And they sometimes don't mind throwing out barbs, so to speak, at other presidents, other politicians, or just the world in general. We like how Donald Trump says what's on his mind. Just sometimes he needs to put a filter on it. Something else my mama told me is think before you talk. In Donald Trump's case, think before you tweet. And, you know, with Roosevelt, it was effective. But, again, they were different kinds of men. But bottom line is not all presidents are as careful about what they say, or always as gentlemanly as the Bushes. That's, I think, a good example of two presidents that certainly projected a gentlemanly image. And You took that concept, Mike, and you wrote a book. And the book came out about a week and a half ago. Again, we are speaking with Mike Purdy, live from his domicile in Seattle, Washington. New book that he's also a presidentologist, like Dr. Feynman. Anyway, you put out a new book, Mike, just under 100 pages, called 101 Presidential Insults, where you expand upon the idea that Roosevelt, Nixon, also someone who wasn't afraid to say what's on his mind, even if it had four letters and started with an F or an S, and Donald right. Trump. First, Mike, why did you just decide to write the book? Is it because Donald Trump has a potty mouth and people are kind of thinking of the presidents as regular men who happen to be the most powerful person in the free world? What was the reason behind wanting to pick up your word processor and write this book? Write the book.
Yeah, great question. So it is 101 presidential insults, but I think that the subtitle is also important: what they really thought about each other and what it means to us. So I've been studying the presidents for many years, and as part of my research, one of the things that has struck me over the years is the relationships between these presidents and how they knew one another and how they had either friendships or there was a lot of acrimony between them. And so I began collecting some of that information, some of those quotations. I actually have quite a few more quotes than 101 quotes, insults. And, you know, I started realizing that I'm sitting on this treasure trove of information about the presidents, what they said about each other. And I thought, you know, given our current political climate, and yes, Donald Trump, who has raised this whole sensitivity to, you know, political insults, I thought this is a good time to begin to think about the fact that this has gone on historically. We can go back to the founding of our nation, and you find presidents insulting one another, oftentimes in private, through diaries or letters or in private conversations. And today, of course, it's much different. It's many times in a tweet. And I thought, what can we learn from this? I think the book is funny. It's kind of laugh aloud funny. You read these quotes and you end up laughing. But I think it's also sad when we think about it and realize this has gone on for a long time. But I want to use the book as a tool to kind of think about our history, to understand the context of some of these quotations and the relationships between them, and then to move from there into a conversation about something that's really definitely needed today, and how do we create a society of civility? And this isn't just in the public square amongst politicians. This is in families, in marriages, in workplaces. I think we've become so polarized that we end up not treating one another with respect. And so the book has this dual purpose. It's timely. It is the dual purpose of being historical and at the same time hysterical.
That best way to say it, Mike. You know, presidents, just like famous athletes and actors and actresses, they put on one shoe at a time, just like you and I. They just happen to be extremely powerful.
They do. And one of the other things that struck me in doing the research for the book is not only their humanity in what they said, but just their overall humanity. I mean, many people are petrified of public speaking. Thomas Jefferson was petrified of public speaking. Many people suffer from chronic depression. Abraham Lincoln suffered from chronic depression most of his life. Calvin Coolidge lost a child when he lived in the White House. His teenage son died when Coolidge was president, and Coolidge later reflected and wrote about that. He said that when his son died, the power and the glory of the presidency went with him. And so we can look at dozens and dozens of examples of these men, and they've all been very human. And so obviously things that come out of their mouth or that they write are also going to be very human.
Mike Purdy again is our guest today, who has recently written a book, just under 100 pages, but every single page is excellent. You'll laugh, you'll learn something, and you might feel proud to be an American, and that America, I think it's the greatest country in the world, certainly isn't perfect, and we maybe forgot that our presidents, despite all their power and all the effort taken to ascend to that office, are still humans, and sometimes humans say things that are funny, are vulgar, are insulting, and obviously oftentimes controversial. Mike, the book came out about a week and a half ago, but is already doing very well on Amazon. It's, I think, one of the top nonfiction or documentary.
It is. I was really very pleased. Actually, Friday, it was the 12th, which was the one-week anniversary of the book being released. On Friday, it was the 12th best-selling book on Amazon for quotations, and I think number 22 on political humor. I think it's gone up a little bit. I think it's 31 for quotations this morning, and 51 in political humor. But yes, it's doing quite well, and I'm very pleased with that.
The book, again, is called 101 Presidential Insults. Look it up on Amazon. I assure you it's well worth the funds. Of course, we get special privileges here being at the station. Mike sent me not only a free copy of the book, didn't even charge me for postage. Mike, you're such a generous person. He also autographed it for me, so it proudly is displayed with my autographs of Pete Rose and other people that I have great admiration for. The reviews in the back of the book, Mike, are very, very glowing. Of course, Dr. Feynman and I recently talked about your book. We did about a half a show segment on it. He quoted, unique and fascinating look at the 44 men who have served as president, highly recommended. Paul Brandis, White House Bureau Chief, West Wing Reports. Gosh, that's hard to say. USA Today columnist, also an author. A terrific book, really well done. And I think the interview that the review, Mike, that just sums it all up. We're talking about locker room type talk and the locker room talk of Donald Trump prior to his becoming a successful candidate for presidency, including some words we're not going to say on the air, but you all know what we're talking about. A.J. Baim, a New York Times best-selling author of a couple books about government and the presidency, said, Mike Purdy brings us into the political locker room where nothing is left unsaid. The book is a statement of the dark humanity of American presidents, sad and hilarious at the same time. Now, Mike, we know about Donald Trump and his potty mouth, and you're just a little bit older than I am. Not much, because you know I just had a birthday, but that's okay. I don't get older. I get better. Right. Is Donald Trump the most vulgar, the most outspoken president ever? Was it Teddy Roosevelt? But let's take a look both at your lifetime, say since World War II, versus in history. Or do people forget that Donald Trump is not the only president who says things that you wouldn't say in front of your kid?
Yeah, I mean, it's true that Trump is not the only president who has said nasty things about others. I would suggest that, when you look at the history, you read the book and you read that, okay, all presidents have said things, and this isn't a comprehensive book, it doesn't include everything, but that Trump has raised this art of the political insult to a new high, or maybe to a new low, and he definitely says more, not just about other presidents, but about other people than anybody else has ever done. And again, I think we find a difference as we've progressed through our history of some of these statements becoming more and more visible and through tweets and things like that. But you had a number of other presidents. I mean, Theodore Roosevelt, certainly. Richard Nixon, certainly, Harry Truman, who's also on the cover of the book. These were very, very opinionated men who had some very intemperate language sometimes about others. And but Trump, I believe, when you look at the historical record, Trump's volume of what he says, the intensity of it, the language of it, the visibility of it, that it, pardon the pun, trumps all other presidents.
So he's kind of set the standard, raised the bar, or lowered the bar, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking at the cover of the book, you know, one of the things we enjoy, a picture's worth a thousand words. And just the cover of this book, the artist who drew this, quite a talent, to say the least. We have five presidents, of course. Front and center, not surprisingly, is our current president with the full coif of blonde hair. Whether or not it's real, we don't know. But I remember once he was at a meeting and he just pulled out his hair and said it's real. Who knows? But whatever it is, he is known for his hair. He has his small hands and his little smartphone where he's tweeting, probably at 2 or 3 in the morning. And, of course, that would be Donald Trump. We also have Harry Truman. And one of my favorites, Tricky Dicky, Richard Nixon. And, of course, the aforementioned Jack Kennedy or John F. Kennedy. So five presidents there on the front cover, drawn just artfully by your official artist. And, again, that artist's name is
Victor Juhasz.
Yeah, that's why I was delaying it, because Ron and I weren't sure how to pronounce his name, and I hate to mispronounce. It's Juhasz?
Yeah.
Okay.
Juhasz.
He is an excellent illustrator. I mean, he's funny as well as accurate. I mean, you just Nixon.
He really is.
He does Nixon's hairline perfectly, and just his mouth. Nixon had a distinctive appearance, and he probably has.
You've got all of these men on the cover, all looking very angry. You know, as if they are, you know, spewing forth some insult about some other president. So. It does characterize kind of the tone of the book in a lot of ways.
I mean, Nixon is the one president that I think has been imitated both in drawings and vocally of any president. I do a Nixon impersonation. I mean, it's not too bad, but it's okay. He's Johnny Carson. I mean, of course, Rich Little. Just his mannerisms. And to me, again, he was certainly an enigma. He was considered one of our greatest presidents, again, environmentally. He started the EPA, again, as a Republican, too. He was certainly middle-of-the-road Republican. Responsible fiscal conservative, considered a foreign policy genius. It just, his power and his ego got the best of him, and he went down.
He did. One of the interesting things about Nixon, as well as some of the other presidents, is you can look at some of the things that they have said about other presidents, and in some ways it could apply directly to them as well. So, for example, in the 1952 campaign, Nixon was giving a speech kicking off his campaign. Nixon was running for vice president under Eisenhower, and he talked about that the Truman administration is going down in history as a scandal-a-day administration. Well, the next day, the word came out about Nixon's secret political slush fund, and which resulted in Nixon giving the famous Checkers speech. But, you know, when you're talking about scandal a day, that would later prove very true about Nixon's administration as well.
Yeah, I remember my dad was very fond of him, my mom, and, you know, I was just a schoolboy at the time, but I liked his presence, just the way that he spoke. He had that nature about him, and Donald Trump says he's presidential. Well, I mean, in some ways, he never is at a loss of things to say. It just, he needs to put a filter on his mouth.
Right.
And again,
right.
No, even his fans know he's not the most, doesn't have the best diction of any president. He needs to understand better that being the host of a reality show and even being a businessman dealing with all kinds of people is not the same as being president. But I think he maybe needs to listen to his advisors a little bit better and conduct himself in a dignified manner. But, you know, he is humorous. As I say, people ask, what do you think about Donald Trump? I say two things. I think I'm evading the question because I'm not really answering about issues, but I'm saying I think his wife is beautiful. And I think that he's hilarious. And, you know, the world's a little too messed up. We need to laugh a little bit, including laughing at ourselves. And, you know, this book you wrote,
Mike.
101 Presidential Insults, what they really thought about each other and what it means to us. It just came out. Buy it on Amazon. It's inexpensive. It is well worth your time. You will learn something. You will laugh. And you will be further interested in the great history of this nation. As we mentioned, Mike, Donald Trump, again, not the only president who says what's on his mind and says things that we're not going to say in front of a family audience. Let's start with Harry Truman. Now, Harry Truman became president after Franklin Roosevelt, who had just been elected to a record-breaking fourth term, had passed away. And what Harry Truman said about Franklin Roosevelt, he was the coldest man I ever met. He didn't give a, well, you can see that word on the radio, but I'm not going to say it, but it starts with a D. Personally, for me or you or anyone else in the world, as far as I could see. Now, that intrigues me, Mike, because Truman was vice president under a controversial but popular and powerful president, Franklin Roosevelt. He didn't seem very thankful to his boss or respectful of the fact that his boss had passed away and had polio. I mean, he was just disabled, and he didn't let that disability affect his ability to be president. Why would Truman say something so mean? It almost sounds like Truman is a bit like the way Trump talks. He will just say anything, even about people that he should have respect for.
Well, I think, you know, we see a couple of things in some of these statements, some of these insults, and some of them, I think, really ring true to the person that they're talking about. So when Truman says that FDR is the coldest man I ever met, well, we have to also think about what was the nature of FDR and Truman's relationship. And, you know, Truman had been vice president for just a couple of months when FDR passed away. I think they met once during that period of time. So FDR passes away in mid-April of 1945, and the inauguration was in January 1945. They met once. They didn't have much of a relationship. FDR could be somewhat of a he was an enigma in some ways. He could be very charming, but he was very political, very wily, and sometimes he didn't let people close to him. So from Truman's perspective, certainly, you know, FDR was a cold man. Didn't let anybody get very close to him.
Interestingly, Mike, we have Gerald Ford, who wasn't vice president for very long because Nixon ended up resigning. Ford took over. And I think we talked about the Bushes, that Ford was a gentleman. But I know it's not a perfect analogy, but did Ford ever say something so mean and direct about his former president, Mr. Nixon? Ford impressed me as being very gentlemanly and, again, more conservative in his speech, like the Bushes. And, you know, he also was an enigma. He was never formally elected, even though he wasn't a bad president. Ron and I are very big fans of his wife. Her legacy continues to do much for the gigantic drug abuse problem that we have in this country. But, you know, Ford, was he ever like that? Or have we misjudged him? Maybe he was a bit more outspoken than he came across.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right about Ford. Ford was a very different type of personality than Harry Truman. Truman was salty in his language. Ford was, I think your characterization of him as a gentleman is correct, but he did say things about others that, you know, we might not expect. You know, he called Jimmy Carter in the heat of the 1976 campaign. He called Carter a sanctimonious hypocrite, and he had some unkind things to say about Ronald Reagan as well. And a lot of these insults come about in the heat of a campaign. It comes about because of political differences or personality differences or a rivalry that they have. But you're absolutely right. I think Ford, we don't hear those kinds of things coming from Ford that we heard from Harry Truman.
Yeah, we look at geographics. You know, people in New York, my family is from the East Coast, and I have that New York personality, kind of say what's on your mind. And Donald Trump, Hillary, they're from the area, so they kind of have that.
And Theodore Roosevelt,
yeah,
too.
And that personality. But probably know what I'm getting at, Mike. Gerald right. Ford from Michigan. He played for Ohio State's biggest rival, was a football player. And, of course, Truman from the city I used to live in, St. Louis, both Midwesterners. We think of Midwesterners as being more laid back and more polite. That might have fit Ford's personality, but if you think people in St. Louis are necessarily subdued and polite, well, Truman might be an exception to that. So we can't even look at geographics as being...
Yeah, it does. I think it's more personality issues than geographics.
Yeah, I mean...
But obviously, they're tied together somehow.
Yeah, I mentioned that Carter was a Southern gentleman, and he kind of comes across to Ron, and even we talked about, man, sometimes even Carter wasn't afraid to say things that he wouldn't say in church. Of course, he still teaches Sunday school, so... This is not necessarily saying the same kind of language that he would say teaching Sunday school right. as he did. So geographics may have some influence, but not necessarily. And we have Woodrow Wilson, someone else that Dr. Feynman and I talk about regularly. He, like Dr. Feynman, had a PhD. He was in academics and well-educated president, also one a bit controversial. But that doesn't mean that in the course of his PhD studies, he didn't say words that you wouldn't say in front of your professor. Warren Harding, about Woodrow Wilson. Of course, Harding being someone who lived a lot of his life in Marion, where we're broadcasting from. Warren Harding said about Wilson, he has unmistakable flights of mental disturbance. Now, again, we have Wilson, our most educated president, and we have Donald Trump. In modern times, certainly one of our least educated presidents. Doesn't mean that he's not intelligent. Again, I think Donald Trump has a lot of street smarts, but certainly at an IQ level, I would put Wilson as well as Carter and Clinton ahead of him. Right. You know,
one of the fascinating things about that quote you just read about Wilson having unmistakable flights of mental disturbance. Is that was written by Harding 2 days after Wilson suffered a near fatal stroke, and I think that was in relationship to the stroke, and that Wilson was, I mean, he was essentially disabled for the last number of months of his presidency, and many people say that his wife essentially ran the government for that time.
Yeah, and we talk about Trump. People think he is mentally disturbed, and I mean, who knows? But just an interesting parallels there that Harding yes. had said, and Harding, again, being a newspaper man, and you want to kind of be clear and be truthful about what you say when you do write a publication. But Harding kind of let it all out when he talked about Wilson. And again, Wilson wasn't one to take that lying down. We mentioned he sometimes conducted himself in a less than professorly manner. Wilson, about Harding, he has a bungalow mind. And a fool of a president. So Wilson wasn't afraid to say what he had to say. And again, we're seeing those things with our current administration. And of course, like almost any show that I do, Mike, our time is running out. But a couple of things I wanted to cover. And you will be back with us also in a couple of weeks. So we encourage people to listen to this interview multiple times. And we'll talk about how to get your book shortly. Of course, we almost had a woman elected president. It's no secret. I'm a big Hillary fan. I voted for her. I would still vote for her. I think she's one of the most qualified people ever to be president. And I would like to see someone else other than, you know, quote, an old white guy be president. If we were to have a female president, Mike, do you think that, you know, Hillary, for example, because she certainly is the one that we think of, would she conduct herself in a more, you know, in this case, ladylike manner? Would she maybe... be more hesitant to be as outspoken, if not vulgar, as other presidents, Trump, obviously, Roosevelt, Harding? Or would we have hypocritical standards expecting women to be more ladylike, or would it not really matter that it's still a president? What would, if Hillary were president right now, what do you think would be that standard we would judge her by in terms of how she would conduct herself?
You know, I think a woman as president is going to be subject to somewhat of a double standard. I think a lot of it is personality driven in terms of how they conduct themselves. I think somebody like Hillary would, if she were president, she would be very tough. But I think in public, she would not have the kind of language that we are hearing today, perhaps in private, definitely.
So we might see a different standard, and we'd look at Elizabeth Warren. I don't know if she has a good chance of winning, but she could. I mean, she certainly is experienced and intelligent and well-spoken, but she is known, too, as someone who says what's on her mind, and sometimes that gets her in trouble. So you never quite know. And there have been rumors about the way Amy Klobuchar treats her staff, that she's not quite as
nice
as she comes across. And I guess we'll find out, like any person in the public eye, how a politician conducts him or herself with staff, with family,
absolutely,
is not the same as on TV or in office. Mike,
absolutely,
let our listeners know how to get your book, how to order it, and how much it will set them back in the greenbacks department.
Yeah, so the book is $11.95. It's available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. You can go into your local bookstore, although I've heard just the other day that Barnes & Noble is out of stock on it right now, but Amazon seems to still be have it and readily available. So $11.95 through Amazon, and if people like it, I'd love if they wrote a review of it too.
Yeah, go on Amazon and write a review. It is a good book. It's funny. You'll learn something. And for the cost of two portraits of the great Abraham Lincoln and two portraits of our first president, George Washington, and a few pennies for tax, it is well worth it. A good present for someone not too early to start thinking about the holidays, or just a present for yourself.
And it's a great book. I think to, get it for the 4th of July when family and friends gather and talk about it and read it and laugh and cry together.
Also invite you to go to Mike's website. Again, he is a presidentologist, just like Dr. Feynman, presidentialhistory.com. You can also look him up on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Pinterest. Mike, you are quite the social media user. And it's good to have something that's funny, that's educational, and will stimulate conversation. As we certainly agree, love him or hate him, Donald Trump has done that. And we like the idea that people are getting involved in politics, forming their opinions, and, get out and vote. I think this book will also teach us that presidents, like athletes, like movie stars, like musicians, they put on one shoe at a time, and they're human beings.
That's right.
And when you're in the public eye, and people are watching you 24/7, as Donald Trump has discovered, and the things that presidents say influences how we feel about them, influences what other presidents and politicians have to say, and allow us to form an opinion. Well, Mike Purdy, again, thank you again for being with us on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. You'll be back with us, if I'm not mistaken, in the early part of July. We will talk more about your book, talk about how it's doing, talk more about yourself. I see you do have a theology degree, which I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that on our next show. But for now, thanks for joining us, and have a great
thank you
rest of your day.